Today on CyberWork, I speak to Tara D. Anderson. She's the Managing Director of Framework Security and an official member of the Forbes Technology Council. Tara walks us through her cybersecurity journey, including her years in the world of finance, opens up about a traumatic event in her life that altered the way she learns and retains information, and how her switch to IT and cybersecurity was an ideal fit. From her days co-founding the consultancy firm Cognitive SLC, an organization whose founders were all neurodiverse, to Framework Security's desire to make protection understandable to small charitable companies and organizations who couldn't bounce back from hacking and theft, Tara's ethos and vision from work to the interview process is a complete inspiration for anyone interested in bringing neurodiverse professionals into their organization. Come and meet Tara today on CyberWork. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. My guest today, Tara D. Anderson, is a cybersecurity advisor with 20 years combined in banking, private equity, and venture capital. As managing partner of the award-winning cybersecurity consultancy, Framework Security, she can be recognized from her appearances on KSL Radio, KSL News, KUTV Fresh Living, Park City Television, IBM TV World Edition, Cyber Talk with Rex M. Lee, including numerous panels and podcasts discussing cybersecurity, cybercrime, and cyber warfare. Tara Anderson is an official member of the Forbes Technology Council, a member of Tortora Breda Institute Excellence AI and Cybersecurity Task Force, sits on the Cyber Resilience and Data Ethics Expert Council, belongs to the Women Tech Council, and many additional organizations that promote diversity, equity, and inclusion in cybersecurity, privacy, and technology. Tara, thank you so much for joining me today, and welcome to CyberWork.
Thank you, Chris. I just realized what a tongue twister my bio is.
No.
You did very well.
I appreciate the challenge. I always like starting something and then realizing halfway through that I'm going to have to jump a little bit, something to work. Very good. To start with, I wanted to learn about your early influences. So your cybersecurity career consultancy goes back at least 20 years. So when did you first get interested in computers and tech, and what was the initial draw? Was it something from education or school years, or have you been like this excited about this kind of stuff since you were a kid?
You know, I don't have the typical story where there's a childhood recollection of passion. In fact, I think if I did anything in childhood or, you know, in junior high school, was maybe to stifle my interests in technology and cybersecurity. And what I mean by that is in the 90s, when I was going through high school, junior high school, the Hackers was a very popular movie with Angelina Jolie. It was kind of like Mystery Incorporated, like Scooby-Doo, which I liked a lot as a kid. And then they're solving like cyber crime and technology.
Yep. And they're awesomely dressed.
Awesomely dressed. And Angelina Jolie says short little haircut, very stylish, all of them for the time, especially. So that movie was out and pretty mainstream. Around that same time frame, The Italian Job was out, which is, you know, a team of sophisticated white collar, like maybe white hat robbers. They're robbing for like a good cause. Yep. One of the leads in that movie is Charlize Theron. And she wasn't a cyber, she was not a hacker in cybersecurity, but she could hack safes. So she was very good breaking into safes. And that was her skill set, which I thought was cool. She was a business owner. So she owned her own private practice. She worked with law enforcement. So she used it for good and or bad. I was really intrigued by that movie and her role in it specifically. But I was also watching movies like Dazed and Confused and Clueless at about the same time. So I couldn't really figure out, you know, necessarily who I was, but it was more cool to be along like the Alicia Silverstone Clueless era and maybe stifle the affinity for Hackers and for Italian Job. And so that part of me was really deeply hidden. You know, I played a lot of Oregon Trail back in those days, you know, the school setting, but I didn't even have a computer in my home in high school. I had a word processor, if that's helpful. So I had to go to the library to access a computer. So I didn't have a lot of access myself, but it was in there. The drive was in there, a very mission-driven kid, just really hit it. It was just more popular at that time to not show a brilliance or, you know, an affinity for technology. So,
oh boy.
Yeah. So that
as
was
soon as, of, as soon as you start breaking out words with more than three syllables, all of a sudden you have like 50% less friends sometimes.
That's right. Yeah. You're living, yeah. You're sitting at different school tables. So, so that was deeply buried, but, I actually really struggled in school, not in my early years, even junior high, but later in high school when algebra started coming on to the forefront, I really struggled with sequencing. And if you remember algebra much, if you miss anything, it builds on each other. So I was ridiculously lost in high school with algebra and got really beat down by that to the point where I did think I was dumb. And I did, you know, really struggle to the point where I was really in jeopardy of graduating just because of being short math credits. Mm-hmm. So a last ditch effort on behalf of my high school counselor was to put me in a finance class, accounting and finance, just to get me, you know, graduated. And I loved it. And I did really well in it. That made sense to me. Anything finance, so interest rates, buying cars, saving money, investing in the stock market. I actually really loved that. And it felt more applicable to me. So it made a lot of sense. And it felt like what I was learning was going to help me in life. So very practical. So I did pass high school, by the way. I graduated. Mm-hmm. And then I went and got a job in banking just almost 2 weeks later. So got into banking and got a really young start into that field. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit. But, you know, as I got into that role, I kind of became more confident in who I was and who I wanted to be as an individual. I realized at that time that I wasn't necessarily stupid. I just wasn't very great at sequencing. Things could get lost pretty easily. And I needed probably a different style of teaching. You know, because I kept repeating the same course, I had the same math teacher over and over and over again. Who taught it one certain way. And that was to my detriment. And I was able to get over that, you know, enroll in college courses, take those alongside working in banking. And that ended up being a very good fit for me. My story about how I really came into IT and cybersecurity comes a little bit later. But there's some early influences like Dorothy Denning, that was, you know, late 90s, 98, who's, you know, still very much present in the work we do today as far as security writing, managed detection and response solutions, encryption. So she's very cool. You know, I liked her TED Talk. She's written several books. Dorothy Denning, most recently, Rachel Toback. She owns her own company, very similar to mine. She used to be a school teacher. Her husband was in cybersecurity. I think she went to DEF CON in Vegas and won a social engineering prize. We just left DEF CON, so that's kind of fresh on my mind. And I think she's pretty darn cool, just her start and who she is as a human being. So I definitely like her. But more on the career trajectory comes a little bit later. And I'm sure, we can get there as we talk a little bit more about careers and all that.
Well, yeah, let's keep moving here. So looking at my guest LinkedIn profiles, as I say, that's my easiest shortcut to getting a sense of a person's professional life. So you mentioned that you started right out of high school into the financial industry, and a lot of your roles were listed as officer, revenue officer, for instance. Can you talk about these types of revenue officer roles? How does this relate to the type of work you do now with your expertise in compliance, or does it at all, or was there a jump from the sort of officer roles to the compliance roles?
Great questions. I've spent many sleepless nights looking at the fan, trying to figure out how all this made sense. You know, how my abstract work experience actually led me to where I am today. And here's what I think happened. So I have many officer roles in banking, and they range from retail branch management to compliance and privacy, sales roles in between. So I've worked in about every area of the bank that you can imagine, both, you know, retail, so public facing, over the phone, back office, in lending. I was really driven to the compliance and the regulatory side of banking. So I realized pretty early in my career that that there is some good work to be done there. A lot of fraud was starting to take off in the banking space in, you know, the early 2000s. And then banking has changed significantly between 2000 and say 2012, 2015. So if you can think of, you know, just post 9/11. So we had a lot of anti-terrorism, Patriot Act regulations that we had to be well informed of and responsible for. You know, I felt a sense of duty, you know, protecting, you know, our money, our infrastructure, our citizens, because a lot of that money that was maybe illegitimately laundered within the banking system could be used to fund terrorist activities. So I had a big sense of duty to look out for those types of things. That's mm-hmm. where it started. And looking for suspicious activity within transactions within banking employees. So insider gotcha. Risk. Mm-hmm. And as the years progressed, you know, we had a big recession. You talk about the Lehman Brothers in 08 and started looking at compliance and lending and how we can protect ourselves and our country from another recession. And then that kind of just gradually grew to more cybersecurity related compliance as banks were transforming digitally. Cybersecurity was, was more forefront. Breaches were happening more often. Mm-hmm. And so banking saw a big transformation during my time there, which I always found really interesting. So I kind of followed more of a compliance path later in banking and really enjoyed it. And somewhere in there, I had a brain surgery. So I suffered from apparently years of periodic strokes. The end result was a brain surgery, but essentially during those years, my veins were kinked together in knots to be real basic about the, you know, how I describe this, kinked together in knots. And there was leaking blood onto the right side of my brain, right side of your brain, frontal. So that kind of controls memory, decision-making, impulse response. Sure. So I was changing. My personality was changing and shifting. Memory was becoming an issue. After the surgery and went through serious rehabilitation and went back to the workforce, eventually I made it back into banking. And at that time I realized that I learned and processed information differently. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting because I was pretty rigid about a few different things. Prior to that, you know, if people made eye contact or broke eye contact, I was always just validating people through eye contact and body language and posture and what they could remember and recite and what I could remember and recite and, you know, being quick on facts. And then I couldn't learn anymore, you know, with words. It was only pictures. And if I didn't do something right away, I didn't retain it. So I started really becoming interested in the mind. And how it could heal itself, for one, which is miraculous in itself, but also all the different types of people there are, like how neurodivergent our world is and what that all means at the end of the day and just looking at people differently. And it was really eye-opening to me. And so so I did have some experience with my own setback. We'll call it a setback, but I think it was a blessing in disguise with the surgery.
Okay.
The brain injury, if you will. And so, you know, eventually I ended up getting out of banking, Chris, not because I didn't love it, but you see through a recession and Lehman Brothers and the days that are too big to fail and you start getting spit on in stores and stuff like that. Yeah. And it wasn't really conducive to raising a family, which was where I was at in my life. And so I did a pretty big shift to startup world and working with entrepreneurs. I did a really ginormous shift, really. Went from, you know, a banking job that was all I'd known to going into a world that was really unfamiliar, but I did it anyway. For the sake of having a little bit more fun, to be honest.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that because it's pretty clear, you know, at a certain point that your roles start to shift, and I didn't necessarily know the mitigating circumstances, but you know, in 2020 you became director of strategic partnerships at Nexus at IT Consultants. So is this where IT and security started really taking hold, or had it been there before that as well?
It was heading in that direction prior. So in the couple years prior, I was a senior partner for a company called Cognitive SLC, Salt Lake City, if you will. Cognitive is an interesting name that we chose for the company because All of us had, well, one of us had autism, one of us had dyslexia, and two of us actually went through a very similar experiences with our brains where we both had strokes. We, you know, one of us resulted in a brain surgery. The other one ended up being, you know, able to rebound on their own. But out of the four of us partners, we all were neurodivergent. But also, at the same time, we kind of founded this perfect team that could help companies enter into markets for the first time. So we were helping doing startup consulting. We were helping with raising capital for companies. So we could have helped somebody from an early stage startup where they're, you know, maybe they have a napkin sketch idea of a physical product or software product. We'd help them launch that product. We would help them secure capital. Sometimes we would take shape onto their team. So as an example, during those years, there were quite a few clients of ours that were in the privacy space. GDPR, CCPA were kind of taking shape. Some regulation was coming out about that. Cybersecurity was becoming more of a known issue. And so many of the clients we had, probably I would say 70% were either in privacy or cybersecurity. Some of them needed some help, either on their sales team, their marketing team, their leadership team in some way. So it wasn't unusual for us to take a seat, like as a director of sales, if you will, if they were looking to make an acquisition, having those conversations with possible investors or acquirers, having conversations with possible investors, and then knowing their company and their market inside out and backwards was really our jobs. So I had to kind of take shape into the you know, several different companies in that space. And I realized that I really enjoyed it. It kind of pulled out that, well, that kid, that geeky kid that I stifled, it pulled out the banker, like the compliance had in me from banking regulation that I enjoyed. And I really, really found an affinity for the spaces, privacy and cybersecurity at that time. But I knew nothing about IT. We referred clients, you know, over to MSPs, managed service providers or IT providers. Often, you know, they were growing, they needed IT help. They just received a round of funding. They were staring at big clients and they needed, you know, some assistance there. So we would help them find an IT partner. And one of those IT partners I went to work with. And that was a big piece that I didn't really feel like I had. You know, they were talking foreign, you know, when we're talking tech stacks and environments, like that that was really tough for me. Like I told you, I didn't have a computer even in my home growing up. You know, I had obviously worked with it through the banking system in my career, but was I fluent in it? Absolutely not. Funny story, and please forgive an expletive, but I
please.
I'm going to give you one expletive in this. Hopefully just one. In this interview. I reached out to my friend who was hiring. He was a CEO of an MSP, and he said, "Great, we have like a part time role for you, and you know, but there's a test. Our HR team's going to reach out. There's going to be a test." I was very nervous about the test. That test made me late for lunch with my husband and daughters, and I told him why. My oldest daughter, who was probably 17 at the time, she said, "You don't know shit about IT," because I said I was going to go work for an IT company. She goes, "You don't know shit about IT."
Yeah.
And I think that was a moment that I wanted to know shit about IT. And I went, okay, going to have to, you know, I need to be a better role model for my daughters. And if they don't think I know anything about this, I'm not doing a very good job of, you know, educating them to my strengths. Well, IT wasn't really it, but cybersecurity and compliance, they were. But if my kids don't think I know anything about this, like, I better know something about this. You know, I need to have them have faith in me. So I just dove in, and that experience there helped me kind of round out that package that I felt like I needed between privacy, cybersecurity, compliance. IT was, that huge mystery land. It was challenging. I wrote notes and notes and notes every single day of all the acronyms I didn't understand. And then I'd have to go home and look them all up. So there were some pretty long days, lots of YouTube time spent, lots of online courses at home. I wasn't in a client facing role necessarily when I started, but it became a client facing role due to acquisitions and, you know, gaps in seats, if you will. All of our clients wanted to know, about cybersecurity and breaches because it's 2020 and their competitors are getting breached. Their neighbor's company got breached. Everyone's working from home and it's like the Wild West out there. You know, there's a lot of COVID scams and phishing attempts, and it's a very scary time for everybody for all kinds of different reasons. But for our business clients, it was, am I going to get attacked? What should I look for? What is this going to do to my company? And how are you protecting me? You know, what are you doing? And a lot of the MSPs were, you know, a little stuck there. Either they had a cybersecurity arm and team and they were ready for it, or they didn't. We were standing ours up. So in that process, we were quickly just trying to meet the need of our clients and being prepared for them. And so I just took that on my shoulders and worked with a couple people that were, you know, pretty talented in cybersecurity, had some background, and we stood it up and got, you know, well-versed in a hurry and started helping clients there. I realized I loved it. Like, that was the missing component, you know, I was feeling full throttle. Like, I was doing what I needed to do, protecting customers and, keeping small businesses in business, because as you know, I worked with startups, I worked with entrepreneurs. I had a passion for that. So I got to really actually help them, protect them. You asked about revenue titles, like chief revenue officer titles. Mm-hmm. I did go on from there to work with a former client. And she was standing up a cybersecurity awareness training platform. So a mobile app that addressed the training weaknesses around cybersecurity. I wanted to be a part of that. So I helped write curriculum and design a gamified program that I felt met the needs of people with different learning styles like myself. And I had a lot of fun doing that for a while, you know, helped them find investment, helped them stand up the product, see the information differently, make it fun. That would be kind of another way that I worked in cybersecurity. Titles, revenue officer. You know, at the end of the day, we're building a business and bringing in revenue and growing clients, but I had a large hand in shaping the product, and that was really cool.
That is cool. Thank you for giving me the context on that. So, for context for our audience, I feel like I've buried the lead here a little bit. We kind of jumped right into it, but you contacted me after I sent out a request for guests who have experience with neurodiversity and neurodiverse workers in cybersecurity. I didn't even know about this, but I want to hear more about Cognition, this group that you were with, who offered all these services. Wherein all the founders had various neurodivergences and so forth. Can you talk about how you all found each other and came together, and what it was specifically that you felt was like that you had to offer specifically, you know, because of your interesting, you know, combination of learning and cognition differences?
Yeah. And we have a very neurodiverse group now too, which is really interesting. It's my company now is shaped very similarly. On our team of four partners, we had, of course, the two of us that had suffered strokes. And then we had dyslexic, you know, someone who was dyslexic, and then someone who had ADHD. How we formed as a company was just kind of through other projects that we'd worked on. One partner and I, we were partner companies, and we helped companies build physical products. And we just found a lot of success in working with each other. We enjoyed working with each other. Our brains kind of worked in very similar ways. Mm-hmm. So we just always enjoyed each other. And when there was an opportunity to build something together, we did it. And mm-hmm. and at that time, that one individual hadn't suffered strokes yet. We were actually in a client meeting when he had his major stroke. And I was actually uniquely able to recognize it because of my experiences on. Yeah. He was kind of like the last one to experience it. The other two, you know, one was actually a doctor, a physician, a neurologist, if you will. Yeah. And he really liked the entrepreneur space, had quite a bit of ADHD. So focus was tricky for him, but he was very innovative. And so he stepped out of traditional medicine and helped clients that were typically in the medical and healthcare space innovate and launch products. And so he just wanted to be an entrepreneur himself. He wanted to help entrepreneurs, but typically like very physician, medically healthcare related space. Mm-hmm. And he was already friends and connected with my other business partner. One of them came from broadcasting. just like 30 years of broadcasting, super great marketer, but dyslexic. So very good verbally, just very well spoken. But everything that we did, like pitch decks, proposals, we just read each other's emails. We read each other's material. We just did a lot of peer review as a team. We were able to do very good things because we were all different ages. I mean, I was in my late 30s. One was in late 50s. The physician actually just got out of kind of like med school, so he's a little bit younger. And then we had one kind of in between us. So mostly male, but different backgrounds. And then there was me, mom's dad, single, you know, recently divorced, you know, all kinds of different, you know, life experiences, learning styles. We were all different, but what we were able to do very well is reach our clients. If one of the partners, and this is true in my company now, if one of our partners is very technical and speaking very technical language to somebody on the other team, you know, one of our clients or maybe their investors, sometimes it doesn't always reside with them. It doesn't land. They're not following it. Yeah. And I have the unique ability to kind of see that and just explain it in a different way, maybe with a little bit more color, a little more description, maybe a little more layman's terms, bring it down to more their level. And so it felt like when we were in a room, all four of us kind of just worked off of each other and were able to really help clients see our objectives. We were able to help, you know, get money for those clients, get them acquired, because we were able to demonstrate value in many different ways and tell very good stories, to be honest. And so that was cognitive and it was fun. And again, we worked with, you know, very small companies to really late stage companies. We kind of grew with them. So, you know, sometimes we were raising millions of dollars and helping them find strategic real estate, helping them with wealth strategy, different things. But because of our different backgrounds and because our backgrounds were so diverse, we could help from almost any end of the business, from, you know, from business filing down to like late stage financing strategies. So in many different industries. So I think our backgrounds were well suited for just that type of consulting work. I think it parlays really nicely into what we're doing at Framework Security. Actually, as I talk about this out loud, the product's different. We're cybersecurity consulting, but many different industries, many different stakeholders that we work with, their backgrounds are different, their industries, their geographies, how they receive information. And then if you take that another level, how we protect them, you know, because bad actors are different too. They're diverse as well. So it takes a diverse team to be defensively minded, offensively minded, and to be able to kind of thwart off all the different attack vectors that we're seeing right now. We're just seeing a ton of value for these diverse perspectives and peer led teams that, you know, it's really effective with clients, but.
Like I said, I wanted to talk about neurodiversity and cybersecurity because we've talked about, you know, I've been saying this for years. I think cybersecurity as an industry needs to bring in and encourage all different points of view, backgrounds, racial, economic backgrounds, gender spectrum, physical disability, neurodiversity, and so forth. Just and exactly like what you said, I think that a lot of this means that you have a larger pool of experiences and problem solving styles at your disposal by thinking like this. So, and what I like about Cognition, the story that you told me about you and your co-founders is that it doesn't sound like at any point any of you said, well, this is going to be a problem, Tara, because you really have a hard time keeping these particular facts in mind. So I don't know how we're going to do this. Or, oh, well, you can't really, you have dyslexia, so I don't know how you're going to, you know, read this as well. So I don't know how we're going to do this. But you all sort of stepped in and filled in each other's spaces. And I think this is a sort of a fundamental thing that I think business across the spectrum is going to have to deal with, the fact that they're expecting everyone to be good at everything all the time, or at least somewhat good, and, you know, maybe won't hire someone if they think, well, there's this one deficiency and I don't know how to fix that. Whereas, you know, with some sort of creativity and thoughtfulness of like how you build your team, that person's deficiency might be someone else's huge strength, and then they can pair up and then they can do things together. So
absolutely.
So I want to ask you a little bit about out in the sort of, you know, out in the field here. What are some issues that you've seen or experienced that hinder neurodiverse working professionals in security and tech from showing their full potential to employers? Or conversely, what are some ways that hiring managers inadvertently filter out neurodiverse candidates for whatever reason?
Great questions. I'm glad that you asked those because I put a lot of thought into that recently. You know, I mentioned that I worked for a managed service provider, a really fun mm-hmm. one, a great environment, culturally hard to beat, but it was an open office. So you had a big open office and it's very like a warehouse environment. So it was echoey. It was incredibly hard, I think, for probably a third of us to focus in there.
We were in an open office until 2020. We were in an open office until 2020, and I would literally not start doing my work until 4 p.m. when the sales team left.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't eight conversations going on around me at all time. I just didn't know at the time why I couldn't focus, or I would just have my headphones on blasting like punk rock or whatever to blast them out. But yeah, no, it's open plan, man. I tell you, I don't know. When are we going to figure that one out?
Right. And you probably remember there was a big uptick in that open office where there was like, take down the cubicles. Let's be no job titles. Let's be mm-hmm. open office and collaborative. I see the value in it for some of us, for some people. And it didn't work for me either. It didn't work for me. In fact, it created a lot of anxiety, frustration. I mm-hmm. felt like I was failing at my job because I couldn't get things done. And I would start, you know, into a project and then, you know, it would take me off into five different micro topics and five micro projects and things would get left off the plate. Things weren't getting done. And that was a struggle for me because previously I felt, you know, like I was a focused employee. I felt I wanted to do the right thing by my clients mm-hmm. and my company, but yeah, details were getting missed. Things weren't getting done. Yeah. If I started a project, it often didn't get finished. I'd had a lot of like unfinished projects and then frustration. And for me with frustration comes depression, anxiety, and some other, mental health struggles. A lot of us went home during COVID, mm-hmm. which we didn't really do a ton of in the IT environment, the MSP environment, but I entered into a more flexible working environment where I could work from home some days, you know, it could be kind of hybrid time. And I realized the problem wasn't really me. And there wasn't a problem at all other than I just really had a harder time in that open office environment than in my home office. Mm-hmm. But then there are some of us too that crave, you know, getting together with human beings. So remote work kind of created its own challenges, and that would kind of lead me into talking about, you know, what we're doing at Framework Security and interviewing process. We have some open roles right now. So we have open roles and we're interviewing. And I realized early in that interviewing process that Zoom virtual meetings, if you will, are tough on neurodiverse population because it's harder to connect with people. If you're already struggling to make eye contact, this really feels like you're on stage. You know, mm-hmm, you forget mm-hmm. that you're having a conversation with a human being and you feel more like you're giving a presentation in front of a class. And when we're interviewing specifically for our cybersecurity analyst roles, our technical roles, we saw this come out a lot more in people that they're just very uncomfortable in this virtual meeting environment. So we, you know, what we started to do, which is, it's going to seem really silly. We would change our posture. We would sit back. We would ourselves become a lot more relaxed. We would offer to turn camera off. You know, do you want to turn camera off and just have a good conversation, get to know each other?
Yeah.
Those little things made a significant impact, even though they sound small, by saying, hey, let's forget this is an interview. Let's just have a discussion about you and your, you know, what you've done and get them excited just to talk about what they're proud of and say, hey, free rein, this is your interview. Let's just talk. What are you most proud of? What'd you do? You know, what are you working on? What do you like to do when you're not working? And then again, just the posture change. If sitting back a little bit and maybe turning camera off made a big difference. And sometimes it was like, hey, you want to try to hack into something? Like, you know, do you want to try to do something fun? Like
do a thing that you like to do? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Show us something fun. And you know, they talked about robotics competitions that they won, chess titles that they have, different environments that they were able to penetrate, infrastructures that were hard, and social engineering triumphs that they had, you know, boxes of donuts that got them, you know, user credentials. And it was cool then when you took away the script and the pressure to perform, a lot of our candidates really opened up. And because of that, we hired, in my opinion, some of the coolest people to work with that I wouldn't have known were really out there if I followed a very formalized structure. You know, you hear out there in HR space, or, you know, in sales, like sales leadership, if people break eye contact, that means they're lying. You know, they're searching for it. Right. You know, sometimes they're thinking, you know, or they're nervous. Yeah. But, you know, not jumping to those conclusions, throwing out the script, having conversation with people and getting to know them has been great. And since we've hired those individuals, they've become a lot more open about just how they learn best, how they work best. We have a very flexible work environment. I mean, we check each other's work all the time. Yeah. Any engagement that we do in peer review all the time. So there's always three or four of us working on any given client. As an example, we have a virtual CISO program. So Chief Information Security Officer, we do it fractionally, but you don't just get that CISO. You get like four of us because we're all like wrapping our arms around each other.
Support team. Sure, yeah.
Making sure there's ample coverage, meeting the comprehensive needs of our clients. If one of us needs to take a day off, whether it be a vacation day, a mental health day, if they need to get out of work, you know, get out of being buried in work, we all have each other's backs. I'm a little bit better verbally than over email myself in proposals, even though I do a lot of those things. So we check each other's work and like, hey, does this look good to you? Hey, I want your eyeballs on this. How would you scope this project? So we do a lot of collaborative work. We enjoy each other's company. Everything is flexible. Our working hours, as long as we're meeting the needs of our clients, and we're available when our clients want to meet, working hours, unlimited vacation time. If you work best by the beach, you know, like, you know, and that's not going to prevent you from doing a great job by our clients, go work at the beach. I travel a lot. My kids play competitive sports. So if I've got a soccer tournament to go to, sometimes I take calls, you know, from the hotel room or from the seat of the car, from an airport lounge. However we work best. And then there's some of us who are like, I can't, that's too much noise for me. I can't do all that travel. I need my office, my chair, I need my light dimmed a certain way. Great. And then we try not to be disruptive to them. We hate Monday morning meetings, so we don't have them. We don't talk to each other any sooner than noon on Monday. Again, if a client has a need, we meet with them. If a prospective client has a need, but we don't do the early Monday morning grind, like go, 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 go. We realize people have anxiety on Sunday nights because of the Monday morning meeting. We get rid of that. Fridays at about noon, we start wrapping up. We wrap up the week so we can put kind of a nice bow on that. See if there's anything undone that we need to do. We prepare for the following week. So nobody's feeling rushed or stressed or overburdened, overworked. We're really trying to fight burnout in our industry too.
That's so huge.
So burnout, huge. Overwhelm. It's a stressful industry. You know that. And we're all very different, but we have figured out that if we can just be flexible and appreciate each other for gifts that we bring to the company, our clients are going to see that, they're going to feel that, and they're going to benefit. And I mean, the most like basic benefit is we have teams that are diverse too, you know, client teams. And we, if it's like we can communicate with everybody because we're approaching every challenge differently, and we're able to do things that real linear teams just can't do because they don't see it. So,
We talk about that all the time on here about how communication skills are so important, which is a much narrower thing to say than what you really mean, is that there needs to be the ability to create a comfort level and, you know, an ease of explaining things. And that can be more than just getting complicated words into easy words. Like you say, it can be putting someone at ease who doesn't feel comfortable in this space, but has been forced into it. Maybe they're in the C-suite and they don't feel like they feel like they're a little imposter syndrome-y or whatever. And if you can bring them in and say, look, I know it's very complicated. We're going to work this, you know, from the ground up and things like that. I think there's just so much benefit. And, you know, you mentioned before about how one of your co-founders of Cognition had ADHD and he had a hard time with focus. The other thing that ADHD people have is hyper-focus. So like a lot of folks, if you have the right environment and they're very interested in the thing, like, you know, they're going to go 15 times deeper than, you know, even the most, you know, hardworking, you know, neurotypical person or whatever, because they want to
absolutely
know the thing inside out, backwards and forwards, which again is just such a cybersecurity necessity, you know. And so if you're, you know, if you have people that can do that and all you need to do is give them the runway that makes them comfortable enough to do that, then it seems like that should be, you know, a must. Now, I see you're in an office right now. Is your team all sort of in the same city? Do you have people, teams elsewhere? Do you do sort of in-persons once a quarter, things like that? How does it work?
Oh, I love talking about this because this is where I think a lot of companies are going, and we're really enjoying this. So as far as a workforce, we're very dispersed. We have offices, physical spaces that employees can go into in Seattle, which is where I'm at today, Seattle, okay. Austin, LA, Salt Lake City. So it's an option. If you mm-hmm. want to get out and you know, need to get ready every day, get in your car, drive to an mm-hmm. office, which I get, especially during the summer, if you have kids at home, please go do that. And there are clients that want to meet in person. They see the value in face-to-face contact and cybersecurity and privacy. They do want to meet in person. So we have offices available. Most of us are hybrid, where we work from home maybe the majority of the time. And then we pop into an office to get out or to meet with clients, mm-hmm. have events. We call them virtual happy hours, which, you know, some of us drink, some of us don't, but we get on with whatever beverage of choice, you know, a couple times a month, and we just hang out. You know, we talk about whatever we want to, movies we've seen, books we're reading, what's working, what's not working in life. What comes out of it is a lot of good laughs, mm-hmm. getting to know each other better. And we really enjoy that. So we're in the spot now where we're shaping the company to really lean into remote workforce, flexible working environments. You know, we found a great solution that's travel as a benefit. So it works a lot like a 401k, where we match what our employees put in for travel. So they not only have a limited vacation time when they need it, they have a pool of money that they can utilize for their vacation. So that eliminates that vacation stress. Wow. And then there's subsidized travel they can buy with that too. We're looking at laundry, laundry services, and we do a lot of virtual giving to each other, you know, like Starbucks when somebody's kind of dragging a week, or, mm-hmm. you know, Uber Eats gift cards, stuff like that. Just virtual stuff we're trying to do to make it fun, to keep things connected. We connect very well over cybersecurity awareness training. We have our own, and mm-hmm. we're making it fun and gamified and very culture rich. So those are the things that we're doing to like team build and stay connected. Right. But we're doing it in all different ways. And so I think that's what's important is
changing it up.
We're not just doing things one way. Let's meet in person once or twice a year, which we do. We just got back from Black Hat and DEF CON. We met in person and it was so fun to meet in person and see each other.
I was just going
to
say our marketing team meets twice a year now. And this last one was just because also like half of our team's in Chicago, half's in Madison, and then there's people all over the rest of the country. So, you know, getting us all together is kind of like a family gathering. I think that's the thing you said, people get nervous on Zoom. It's like, we're doing the same body language, but there's still something different about that versus having that body language in person with someone. You still have a different relationship with that. Yeah.
Yeah. The energy isn't the same. You're not feeding off of each other in the same way. You also get caught looking at yourself. And if you're self-conscious in any way about anything, you're going to focus in on that. And so we love those in-person events. It's good for us. I'm just coming back. I'm really probably still glowing from just the good time that we had. We met up with clients and partners for the first time in person too. And that was just really energizing for all of us. We're trying to just change up the ways that we collaborate with each other. And it's challenging to find new and inventive ways to do that. But the goal being like meet each other where we're at, you know, and it's different for all of us. And, you know, our lives are so vastly different. So the more we share about our own lives, the more we can understand about how people work best and how to support them. And I think our clients feel that they really I think they feel it and I think they benefit from that.
You mentioned that a couple of your clients specifically also have, you know, some of your clients have neurodiverse team members as well, and that they really appreciate that they're able to sort of connect in a certain way. Do you feel like Framework has developed this reputation as kind of like neurodiverse friendly to, you know, clients? Is that something where there's people who, you know, are specifically looking for you because you have that reputation, or is that something you're trying to cultivate?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. I hope so. I don't think we're there yet. Maybe this interview will help. So far, our business is really coming from client reviews. So our clients are great with the reviews, and that brings in a good majority of our business. And their referrals. So they will refer clients, and I think they refer like-minded, you know, clients to us. And maybe they can even conceptualize, you know, what we're really doing here that makes them feel at ease and comfortable. But what I read time and time again is that, you know, they call us by our first names in the reviews. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they feel comfortable with us, and we simplify cybersecurity for them. So a big part of our mission is to simplify it. It's overdone, we think. It's overtooled. There's too much spending going on. We're really just trying to cut through the noise.
And there's also sort of jargon for the sake of jargon and sort of like, you know, I think we're still kind of getting away from the whole sort of, you know, elite vibe of the sort of, you know, the super hacker in the hoodie and the, you know, the green screen with the Matrix letters on it and stuff like that. And, you know, I think part of that comes with humanizing the, you know, the actual tasks that need to be done and realizing that it's not just, you know, people spouting off acronyms at you, you know, until you say uncle, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I've talked about the pages of acronyms I used to have to write down when I was in IT and had, you know, some experience in it. I mean, we're working with enterprise companies that have full security teams, full IT teams. We're also working with a 2 or 3 person nonprofit, and they're really good at what they do. And it's raising money for their causes, what they care about, making an impact. And what is really, really beneficial for me to see is, you know, some of these companies, like, they're protecting their data. So, and what I mean by that is, you know, we're working with healthcare nonprofits that work with children. We're working with nonprofits that help animals in many different, you know, situations that are compromising to them. So, sorry, let me focus a little bit. Essentially, Chris, their videos matter a lot to them, their fundraising efforts from over the years, their celebrity endorsements. There's footage of the work that they've done that helps them raise more money for their pursuits. And if that gets compromised or lost or damaged in any way, like that's a business ending event, or it ends the organization, and that ends to them, that's their lives. So, you know, that's their pursuit. And so we protect that. And so we work from these, you know, very compassionate nonprofits of 2 or 3 individuals, or we'll work with scaling startups, kind of a similar structure, the founding team, and they're very good at what they do, but they're looking, you know, they're staring down a contract with a company that has very robust cybersecurity requirements. They don't know what it means. They need some help. And so we're trying to come in and meet everyone where they're at. And if we can turn on a setting or two to make, you know, to close a control on an assessment, we're going to do that. If we need to find the most cost-effective solution that closes as many gaps as possible, we'll do that. If it's give them our partner pricing, because that's the only way we're going to get something done and maybe eat some of our, you know, margin, absolutely, we're going to do that. And so it really is trying to find the way to meet people where they are, because they're human beings. And again, they're either taking the seat on a large enterprise organization, or they're, you know, they're just trying to figure out how to protect the data and all that they've worked for, you know, in their nonprofit all over the years. So we're kind of working anywhere in between. And so we need to, you know, take utmost care to make sure that they're comfortable, that they understand the information that we're relaying, and that we're, you know, just making it as simple as we can for everybody. So that's the approach that we take as a company. I think it's really landing. You know, hopefully the message will get out there, like, hey, this group, you know, they're neurodiverse, and then like, so am I, and I could be comfortable saying like, oops, sorry for that typo, or like, oops, I'm not understanding that. Can you explain that in a different way?
Explain it again, or I forgot to write it down, or
Like, we can all just say, hey, like, that acronym is just, I can't remember that, or like, too technical. Can you explain it? And then, we can kind of switch gears and look at it differently. Pen testing. Yeah. There's so many different types of ways to get inside an organization. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different, you know, threats against organizations, bad actors, and they're diverse. So it's like, you just really need a diverse team to be able to see it the same way, say, a hacker would. And so many different ways
that's where you feel the sort of art and science of it is that you're not just flipping switches on and off. Like, you really are thinking of it as this sort of this cascading, you know, wave of ideas and possibilities that might come at you and that you might have to defend against and so forth.
That's right. That's right. There's just so many ways that diversity helps. It solves a lot of problems.
So we're getting close to the hour here, and I want to let you go pretty quick, but I want to have you continue this a little bit here. So for people who are listening now, who might be neurodiverse themselves, who are maybe not in cybersecurity, but sort of dipping their toe in through our podcast, and I know people do that, so thank you, who feel that cybersecurity might not be a good fit for them because of their life experiences. Can you talk about some ways that you've helped bring your neurodiverse workers into the team? You talked about it before, but like, just sort of talk folks through the goal of this show has always been to lower the barrier entry for people who are just considering cybersecurity as a career. So for our neurodiverse friends listening, like, what's a possible barrier to entry that we can knock down in our industry, like right now?
Yeah. A barrier to the industry, representation. They're really, you kind of talked about the hoodie thing and the green backgrounds. And I think up until recently, there was just not a lot of representation. It was, you know, a 20 something male in a hoodie sitting behind a computer in a dark room. And those are the hackers, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, on the other side of that, you have people, meaning, you know, any professional technology or cybersecurity, they're portrayed as geeky, you know, they're really smart and like not relatable. And so I think just more representation would be helpful in our industry. I like what I'm seeing as far as boot camps, you know, online, you know, certifications out there. I was just asked to join a board for a company out of Salt Lake City called V School, and they've been doing a lot of really cool things over the years in the coding and development space, and now they're bringing on a cybersecurity arm. So it'll be fun to see where that goes. They're working with the GI Bill, so you know, a lot of military veterans, very mission driven individuals, very diverse backgrounds, mission driven individuals. They're seeing a lot of success in cybersecurity because they can portray, you know, they can parlay that into the field.
The scrunch face was just the fact that our GI Bill certification has been pending for a while now, and we would really like to be able to be GI Bill certified because a lot of our clients and students and so forth are either in the military or moving into military or federal spaces and stuff. So that's a huge piece of the puzzle for sure.
Yeah, what you're doing is invaluable, making it accessible, affordable, or free. As a mom and a working mom, who this wasn't my first career, to be able to dip into it on the weekends and the evenings, huge. There's organizations out there called Tech Moms that caters more to the moms that have been home. They haven't worked for a while, they're working for the first time. There are so many programs out there now, if you search for them, like yours, that really make it flexible and easy to get into. See if you're interested. Maybe play some of like the capture the flag games, like some pen testing games online. See if you enjoy that stuff. But I think it is just seeing more more people of color, more people with handicaps, more people that are willing to say, "Hey, I'm neurodiverse and I love this." You know, I'm a mom and I'm, you know, I didn't know shit about IT, but hey, I guess I do, you know, because I got it. I learned a lot and I got into it and I love it. So I do think it takes all of us talking more about our experiences, showcasing all the different directions you can go in cybersecurity. There's so many. And if we, if our company gets a phone call from somebody, a student, a prospective student who wants to know more information about the field, we take those calls and we talk about what we enjoy. And it really just like to see more people talking about it, admitting that they're not perfect, you know, and just being open human beings and sharing their experiences, and more of that I think will help. I love the work that you're doing. And I think that's, you know, probably what I would recommend is if you're interested to take a course or two. And if that's not the course or two for you, look at all the, you know, 100 plus other areas you can go inside with the charity. Another one out.
Absolutely. You talked about it a little bit, but at the end here, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about Framework Security, the services you provide, and whether you have any big projects or initiatives on the horizon that you're excited to tell us about.
Absolutely. Framework Security has been wonderful. You know, I've been open with the company about my brain surgery and gaps in employment and changing careers from the start. That always felt like an easy conversation to have with the co-founders of my company, which has made my working experience open and comfortable and enjoyable. But what we do is, like I said, we simplify cybersecurity, and we do that through cybersecurity consulting. We do framework assessments. Big surprise with the name, right?
You know,
we're doing the CIS 18 assessments, NIST assessments, and helping companies, you know, baby strap headlights on the car, if you will, see where they're weak, see where they're strong, and help them remediate. And we do that in a very user-friendly way, a very budget-friendly way. Virtual CISO programs, which is, as you know now, virtual CISO teams, a virtual CISO analyst, and myself typically. And we do all kinds of penetration testing, and we love that because we feel like we brought in the best, coolest talent, and they're you know, having a good time doing pen testing. We're doing good work for clients there. And what I'm most excited about is our cybersecurity awareness training that we're launching internally. So we have outsource that to partners in the past, and that's gone really well. But we wanted to try our hand at developing our own curriculum and doing it, you know, under the Framework Security name for our clients. And that's been cool. That's been fun because we've been able to look at behavior design and how people learn a little bit more and cater to different learning styles, like we talked about, and hopefully improve cultures and cultures of cyber readiness, you know, teams that are, you know, not living in fear of what they could do, but feeling more empowered for how they can help their companies. So all kinds of exciting stuff, but around the premise of just making it fun and simple, if we can, affordable, common sense. But framework security, it's cool. We enjoy it. We love the work that we're doing.
And I love that you love it. And I love that you're out there and that you talk to us today. So one last question for all the marbles here. If our listeners want to know more about Tara D. Anderson or Framework Security, where should they go online?
I am all over LinkedIn, and you'll find anything about like my kids' athletics to events that we're hosting to cybersecurity advisories on my personal LinkedIn.
There is a lot of good writing on LinkedIn for sure.
Thank you. Our Framework Security page is up there. Frameworksecurity.com is how you can connect with us, you know, as far as, if you have a need that we can help you with right away, we're happy to help. But, you know, thank you, Chris.
All right. Well, Tara, thank you so much for providing us with your perspectives and insights today. Really enjoy talking to you.
You as well. It's been so much fun.
And a big, big thank you to the 75,000 people who have subscribed to our YouTube page and regularly check out and comment on our episodes. So thank you all so much for staying with us on this journey. Now, before I let you go, I want to invite you to visit InfoSecInstitute.com/free to get a whole bunch of free stuff for CyberWork listeners. There's Work Bites, which is our new security awareness training series featuring a host of fantastical employees, including a zombie, a vampire, an alien, a princess, and a pirate, making security mistakes and hopefully learning from them. You can also visit InfoSecInstitute.com/free for your own cybersecurity talent development ebook. It's got in-depth training plans for the 12 most common roles, including SOC analyst, penetration tester, cloud security engineer, information risk analyst, privacy manager, secure coder, and more. And finally, check out our free Secure Your Screen Toolkit, to produce and direct you and your employees during National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. The toolkit includes one training module and an assessment, 5 posters to hang on the walls of your screening room, 4 newsletter templates, 4 email templates, a screensaver, and an employee presentation, so you can save the day by preventing your organization from ending up with a starring role in the next big hacker heist. Lots to see, lots to do. Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free. And yes, the link is in the description below. WorkBytes, ebook, toolkit, it's all there. infosecinstitute.com/free. Thank you once again to Tara D. Anderson and Framework Security. And thank you all so much for watching and listening. And as always, we will speak to you next week. Take care now. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.